Podtacular episode 323, Halo 1 review for October 24th, 2012. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I am your host, Dust Storm.
I'm your co-host, Daphling.
And I'm your other host, Brent Gamer.
Today, we are going to be talking about Halo 1, 2, and 3, which are the Halo games that Master Chief has been in before. And from one of our shows last week and from a couple of contact emails that I've personally gotten, some people want to go through the other campaign stories behind Master Chief and kind of have an idea of what we've been through up until now. So we figured we'd take a time to do one show to go over the games and kind of overview on the campaign stories and then kind of talk about moments that we like throughout the game and that kind of stuff. Talk about the evolution of Halo.
You could say that combat evolved throughout the Halo series.
I was hoping someone would pick up on that, and I'm glad you did.
Yeah.
So yes, the first game is called Halo Combat Evolved. And this is where we see Chief for the first time in any Halo game. So this takes place after the Pillar of Autumn, of course, as most of you guys probably know from Reach, after they took the slipspace jump from Reach, and due to a not-so-random jump that Cortana made, they ended up near this ring world that they had no idea what it was called. So the Covenant, obviously, with having vastly superior technology nonetheless in terms of being able to travel through slipspace, was able to anticipate where we were going to end up, and they managed to get to where we were going first, and they pretty much are forcing us to kind of abandon ship on this weird alien ring world that we don't know the name of until later. But that brings us to the first level of Halo Combat Evolved, which is Pillar of Autumn. This is where gamers for the first time really get a feel of what an FPS was like on the console, and Bungie pretty much nailed it. The first thing that you do is you have the cutscenes, but the actual playable bit, it goes through kind of a little tutorial mode where it shows you how to aim with the reticle, and for those people that like inverted, you guys suck.
Whoa.
I'm kidding.
Whoa.
You're just different.
Whoa. Yeah. It's like saying that left-handed people suck.
Sometimes they do, especially when they beat me in Halo.
Yeah. No, I actually, there's a funny story behind that. I have no clue why I started playing inverted. I originally started playing just like with the normal stick configuration, and then one day I decided to change it for no reason. And now if I ever try to go back to the normal configuration, I just can't do it.
You're an inverted player? Wow.
Yes, I'm inverted. I've tried many, many times to get back to normal, and I just can't do it.
I did not know this about you, Brent. Wow.
Yeah, it's true. Wow. I ruined myself. That's why I'm so defensive.
Fair enough. But so we have the tutorial, and then they kind of go through the tutorial of how the shields work, since it was a futuristic shooter, and having shields was kind of a new thing. The big shooter before Halo came out was actually GoldenEye for Nintendo 64. A lot of people think that that's really the birth of the shooters on the console. But Halo pretty much revamped that and completely redid the control schemes, and it stuck. And that's where we get a lot of the control layouts from today's first-person shooters, is kind of what Bungie did with Halo on the console for the first time. And back then, the graphics looked really nice. Now, they don't look as nice. They still look decent, though.
Well, they look crisp.
Yeah. But you can definitely tell that there's hard edges in places where it's, You can tell it's older graphics.
Well, yeah. But Bungie didn't have the same budget that they would have for Halo 2, so.
No, which is a vast improvement. If you guys saw in, what was it, last week's bulletin or the bulletin before, the comparisons of the Master Chief side to side?
Yeah.
I think it was last week.
Last week.
I think it was last week. So we talked about that, and you can see the difference. There's a big difference from Halo 1 to Halo 2, and then another big difference from Halo 2 to Halo 3. Not as much of a difference, but pretty significant. And then we have a almost a new art style from Halo 3 to Halo 4. Granted, it is a different studio, so that would explain why for the most part. But well, go ahead.
You could say that the jump from Halo 3 to Halo Reach was kind of a different art style in its own way. I mean, having the Spartan you're playing as, you know, be able to wear different armor types and
right.
customizing it.
People often complain that Halo Reach ended up looking too gritty, like they're going too much for gritty and realistic feel, as opposed to Halo 3, which is like extremely colorful and vibrant.
I've never heard that said, but it makes sense. That does make sense.
Oh, no, you go on like Bungie forums, 343 forums, people, maybe not so much now, but a little while ago, people would talk about how, you know, Reach seemed too gritty and dirty looking after Halo 3. You know what I mean? Like, in Halo 3, your Spartan, all the Spartans, like, it was very solid colors on their armor.
Yeah, it was definitely a lot more vibrant.
Yeah, they look very clean, like, very sleek. And then it reached, like, it does look a little more gritty and beat up as far as, like, the armor and the colors and stuff.
Right.
But that's how kind of design advances, though. Halo 3 takes place way after Reach. So, of course, his armor is going to look more sleek. It's refined. Right. Also, in Reach, you're mostly dealing with, you know, rocky areas and military installations. And there's only so much you can do with that.
Or gray and green Forge World maps.
Yeah, seriously, right?
Yeah.
That was like the palette for each multiplayer was green grass, blue sky, gray structures.
Or at least half of it, yeah.
Yeah, half of it.
Yeah.
But in Halo 3, you're jumping around from forests to massive Forerunner installations.
To deserts.
High
to
charity.
Beaches.
To, yeah, all these. I mean, there's just a larger array of different environment types that they can play around
yeah,
with.
Yeah, definitely. Which is why I'm excited to see Impact being a space-like Forge map.
I like the colors in the space, right? All the pretty colors.
Yeah, the skybox? The skybox on that map? Oh my goodness, like, that looks
yeah.
pretty.
The galaxy stuff off in the distance, yeah. Kind of reminds me of on the map what was the Condemned? Yeah, the space station. The DLC map Condemned, some of the space stuff you could see out in the distance was colorful, and then it could be turned like super colorful if you had the right coloring effects, like the juicy and
the filters.
They did some interesting stuff with the colors on that map for some of the infection game types and in the matchmaking lately. Super saturated.
Yeah, bringing it back around the colors that they put back into when they did the anniversary edition for Halo CE, that was a massive kind of color change too. The yeah. color palettes in Halo CE when it originally came out were a lot more basic, and then when we got the upgrading graphics with CEA, we could just the gameplay was still that just goes to show how solid the gameplay was, the fact that you could remake a game and it still is fun to play.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, I kind of have like a small problem when like Frank O'Connor goes on and on about, oh, you know, look at this Halo CEA we made. It feels like a modern shooter. It plays like a modern shooter. I don't totally agree with that. It plays pretty well still today, but it does feel a little stiff and clunky compared to totally modern shooters. He's not totally right there on that, in my opinion.
Right. It's not the best, but it's definitely, yeah. It would definitely be up there.
No, it's really good, yeah, but it's just not absolutely like a modern shooter. It doesn't compare to, like, you know, Crysis or Battlefield or something as far as, like, the smoothness, which isn't its fault, but and I get that they're trying to hype it up, but still.
So, but
I mean,
back
how many?
To,
go ahead.
One more tangent, then we gotta move on.
Go ahead.
Go, Brent. No, I
want my tangent was too big. It would take too long.
Well, just do it.
No, but your tangents are always really good. Go.
I'm just saying, how many games could you take from that time period, especially like first-person shooters, and remake them today and have them still be enjoyable?
Not many, because that Doom 3 just got remade, right? And that got like a 67 on Metacritic or something.
Well,
right
the reason for that was because of certain design choices they made in this one. It's not that Doom 3 was bad; it's just that some of the stuff they chose to do in the BFG edition was messed up. I'm not exactly sure because I never played Doom 3 or BFG edition, but
me neither.
It doesn't sound like it's Doom 3's fault. It sounds like it's whoever remade its fault.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like kind of odd, because usually when games get remade, they're not significantly different than their original version. I mean, they're at least as good or critically better, if you want to think about it, than the original version. But
well, hopefully it's better if you're remaking the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Halo 2 HD, when they make it, will probably feel a little smoother, of course. More close to modern shooters, definitely.
Well, people were still playing it until the original Xbox Live service got shut off.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it's definitely smoother than Halo 1. Yeah, I mean, there's no question about that. Yeah. Probably hold up a little better.
But we're talking about campaign, too, though. The Halo 2 campaign and Halo 2 multiplayer were two completely different components.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, they both were really good, though.
It was still the same engine, regardless.
Although, if you look at... But Halo, I'm saying that... Go ahead.
Halo 2's campaign was a little drawn out for me.
But imagine how much fun that would be in HD. All the colors and
I have that
lights.
On my computer.
No, but like true, like new, you know, like CEA, like good graphics, like
new,
you know what I'm saying?
Like new textures, new.
Yeah. They redo it all.
It in the Halo 4 engine.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks good in the current engine, to be honest.
Oh, but I'm just saying, you know what we're saying. Bring it into true HD.
Yeah.
You know, make all the textures super high res. Have it run really smooth in the Halo 4 engine, just stuff like that.
Yeah, Dusty, I'm not saying Halo 2 Vista or whatever you're referring to looks bad. No, it still looks decent, of course. It always looked decent. But yeah, like Brent said, yeah, bring it like they did with the Halo 1, the anniversary. Give it some real modern day graphics, you know.
I mean, Halo Custom Edition looked way better than it did on Xbox.
There was never a Custom Edition on Xbox.
No, I'm saying Custom Edition on PC looked way better than the Xbox version.
Halo
if you're running it on the right hardware.
Oh, so like hacking your Xbox for Custom Edition?
No, I'm saying Halo PC.
Oh.
Halo on your PC looks better than Halo Combat Evolved did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. So, we'll see if they make a Halo 2 remake.
Oh, they absolutely will. They said, I remember, I think they said in like interview with... Official Xbox magazine or something, they were asked if they're going to make a Halo 2 HD, and the guy's like, I forget who it was, but he 343 guy said if Halo 1 HD anniversary sells well, then Halo 2 HD is definitely, like, you know, most likely. And Halo 1 anniversary sold pretty well, right?
They need to make Halo 3 in the Halo 4 engine just to troll everybody.
That would be funny.
See, Halo 3, that's where I draw the line. I don't think Halo 3 needs to be remade anytime soon.
No, it doesn't.
No. I mean, it's high def.
Yeah, exactly.
It is part of the current gen.
Yeah. It's 11 something by like 768 high def or something like that. It's some odd resolution that's not 720p or 1080p.
Yeah. Yeah, just
I don't even think that, Halo but... I don't even think Halo 4 is 1080p actually. I think it's true 720p, but I don't think it's 1080.
Is it 30 or 60 frames per second?
I want to say it's 60. It may just be 30, but I want to say 60.
I would rather have 30 consistent than 60 broken.
That's a good point. In my opinion, they only need to remake 1 and 2 simply because those were on the original Xbox. You know, like, bring those two classics.
Yeah, I agree.
And bring those two classics into the current gen, and then stop there. You don't need to remake Halo 3. That's still too recent, and it still looks and plays pretty well, and it always will, in a way. Because graphics can only get so good, and you know what I'm saying? So
what happened in Halo 1? We never actually got around to talking about that.
Yeah. I've tried to bring it back a few times. So we start off in the Pillar of Autumn, where we run around throughout an exploding ship. And we run past a bunch of Marines, and Covenant's obviously boarding and trying to kill everyone. We finally get to a point where a Marine standing out there is like, Chief, Captain needs you on the bridge ASAP. So you go find Captain Keyes, and pretty much boils down what's going on with the whole situation. And then he basically hands you Cortana and a gun and says, get Cortana off the ship. Make sure the Covenant don't capture her. So at that point is where we first see in the games the introduction of Chief and Cortana kind of joining together and going out. The rest of the time on the level, you're pretty much just finding your way out of the ship. There's nothing too special throughout the rest of the campaign on this level, I think, to really warrant any attention, is there?
A lot of narrow corridors.
Yeah.
Like, more than you would see in the rest of the game. And I think that was kind
it's
of
just
like...
just because you're on the ship.
I think in a way that was a way to prepare you for the kind of open world first person shooting that you would get into later. Because if you think about it, at that point, first person shooters harken back to Doom. And Doom really was a lot of open corridors in a lot of ways. And so they're setting you up to think it's going to be like a narrow corridor shooter. And then you get on to the Halo, and you're like, wow, this
so
is...
So starting on familiar ground and then kind of moving on from there.
You're like, boom, look at this open world, like, amazing environment that we've, you know, I mean, you have the Halo
you,
rising
you pretty
up
much
in Skybox.
Jump right into it after that first level. There is one other thing that you get introduced onto the Pillar of Autumn, and that's the use of the motion sensor. And that shows you where enemies are based on their movement. It's not a radar, it's a motion sensor. People tend to get that confused. So, after wandering through the ship a lot more for a good, I want to say, after you get the waypoints, at least another good two-thirds of the rest of the level, you get to the last drop pod, you leave the Pillar of Autumn, and you go crash land on Halo, which is what the title of the second mission is. So Halo is... like Brent said, it's the big open aspect of the game where it's this giant, huge open world. And looking at
it's streamlined to a point.
But I mean, the environments are large.
Yeah,
very, very large.
They really need to bring that back. Dusty and I kind of got into it. I don't want to get a huge tangent, but Dusty and I kind of got into a conversation about that recently. That me, I don't know about him, but I at least want larger environments like that to really come back to the series. Not totally open world, like not, you know, like be like, doesn't be like Skyrim or anything, obviously, but a little more open would be cool. Kind of like they did with like the first level in Reach, the farmland, where you're driving the trucks around. I mean, just a little bit bigger than that, but you get the idea. Be interesting.
I would like to see a lot more kind of side mission esque.
Yeah, like a choose your own path kind of thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're still kind of on rails a bit, but you have little like side things you can go do to kind of help kind of build out your specific story. It wouldn't be necessarily massive game changers because they obviously have a story to tell and they don't want to alter that. But like you said, on Winter Contingency, you were able to choose which way you wanted to go with finding out where the surviving Marines are.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be ended up being one of two places, depending on the path you take. So it's just little things like that where adding those things would kind of add to the game, I think.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
We'll see if they do something like that come 2 weeks out.
Yeah, I mean, there are enough linear shooter campaigns out there. You know, Halo, with like its first game, we're talking about right now, being a little open. I mean, why not go back to that a little more, you know?
Right.
But so, to be fair, Halo's a lot more narrative driven than it was back in the Halo 1 days.
Right.
There wasn't a whole lot of narrative in Halo 1.
But it's like,
even though Fall of Reach had been released prior to the game coming out. But
yeah.
I mean, now there's an entire expanded universe that they have.
So expand the game. I mean, there's an expanded universe, so expand the gameplay, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Well, the gameplay is following a more specific storyline.
Right. But it's just like, look at the power they have technologically. Yeah, and they could make some really big, interesting environments for us to explore, like in one level, and in each level. I mean, they could make some really amazing stuff for these future games.
Oh, yeah. For something like this, though, it's almost, you don't want to take away the first-person shooter and kind of the target down the certain path that you're trying to make people go. But you also want to kind of vary up the experience every time you play so people come back to play the game. And I think that's one of the things where that's kind of what we're trying to hit on right now is making sure that you don't get a stale experience. And there are options to help kind of make your experience unique.
Yeah.
So.
Hopefully, yeah, in 2 weeks we'll see how much they iterate on that idea.
Halo gameplay in and of itself is, you know, it works to make your experience unique just by its own mechanics. I mean, if you, like, stick an elite and then he, like, accidentally invades into another elite and, you know, they both blow up and then you pull out a AR and shoot up a Revenant, but then the Revenant comes running at you, so then you hijack it and now you have a Revenant and you're running around with it and blowing up people. I mean, that's a completely different experience than, like, if you had a sniper rifle and you're just going around popping elites in the head.
But, I mean, answer me this. When was the last time that you went to go play campaign to kind of get that different experience just on your own for fun? I haven't done that.
No, I haven't done it.
And that's kind of what I'm getting at. It's making that kind of different experience where it's like, I did this last time. What if I go do this time?
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it is a different experience every time just because of the interactions, but the guideline of the story is exactly the same. Or just about.
I remember when they first brought up the whole Requiem thing, the big planet you're going to be on in Halo 4, way back like in the concept art kind of phases, and people got all excited, oh, this is a big planet, look at these concept art, this looks huge, maybe it'll be more exploration-based this time around. And then,
Some of the stuff that we've seen in the trailers, especially the gameplay trailer that we just got seen yesterday as of this recording, it looks like there's some pretty nice open environments that we're going to get in campaign.
Yeah.
And just look at the E3 demo.
Well, that was kind of in a closed-in jungle. I don't know if that's a great representative.
That was how much of a campaign level? Probably 20, 25%.
Right. Yeah, we'll see. Do you guys remember like a year ago when they had their like creative director or something leave the project because he said he was no longer creatively excited about it?
No, I don't remember that.
So, I forget his name, but they had like the creative director left like a year ago because he said he was no longer excited for the project and like it wasn't his original vision or something. So maybe he wanted it to be a little more open. But they wanted.
Well, he left from 343?
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Okay. You can look this up. But, yeah, the creative director left or something. He wasn't longer excited. So maybe he wanted it to be more open world ish, but they wanted to keep it kind of like linear Halo like it had been going for a while. So maybe that's why he left. Or it could be vice versa. But, you know,
I doubt it's vice versa. I mean, you don't get. I don't know how many creative directors would get really excited about linear corridors.
Interesting.
But, I mean, there's no telling why he left. So I'm not even going to really comment on it, because I have no clue. I don't know what the situation was.
This is back last year in September.
Oh, yeah, this is your Ryan Patton, one of the creative directors on 343 Industries, has left the company after finding that he was no longer creatively excited, quote-unquote, about the title. So, I wonder why.
But getting back to Halo, this is the first time we see the Covenant spirit in the Banshees. You're pretty much instructed to escape the area from the escape pod that you crash-landed on the ring with, and you're the only survivor left. So you have to go pick up the ammo, you get the health pack, and you're opened up to a beautiful vista for the most part. It's really pretty. Especially back in the day, and with the new graphics, it looks even more awesome. And then you get the notification that there is Covenant inbound, you see the spirit fly by, and you see the Banshees. The first time, did you guys go shoot the Banshees, or did you try to just avoid them?
I probably avoided them.
I just looked at them. I was like, whatever.
You just looked at them?
I mean, when all I have is like a pistol and a assault rifle, nothing with a whole lot of range, how am I going to deal with that, honestly?
Right.
I just probably just avoided it.
So you get past those, you come up to a structure after walking a little bit, and you see a spirit that's dropping off Covenant forces. You have to take all of those out, and then you join up with Marines that are in the structure, and it's from one of the other escape pods that left. Fortunately, everyone in that escape pod survived. And then you are faced with 5 waves of spirits coming in and dropping troops off. After you fight those off, you have Echo 419 come and drop you a Warthog, so this is the first time you actually drive a vehicle in the game. After you're hopping in there, you drive around a cave system for a good minute, 2 minutes or so, and then you come up on a gap in a canyon that's underground. You have to fight off some Covenant, take out some Zealot elites, or they're not Zealot class. I forget what class they are.
Probably like the lowest, right?
No, it's not. They're not blues. They're reds.
Okay.
Whatever class that is. And then you go activate the light bridge. After you do that, you cross over and you come up on this big hill where there's a waterfall at one end, and then a river flowing through the rest of the canyon, and you have to go to three different spots to rescue Marines. You go there, take out usually... So the one that's on the cliff edge, it's the one with the structure, the one that you play Insulation 04 in Reach Firefight. That one, you actually have to clear out Covenant that are on the structure above and then below the structure, which is where the Marines are camped out. After you do that one, you can do either one at the head of the river or I forget what the other one is. Head of the river, cliff edge, and then something else. I forget what it's specifically called. But you go to the other ones. One of them is there's Marines up in some rocks. You have to fight off Covenant, then go up. You actually have to go up to the Marines to trigger that you've actually, quote-unquote, saved them. Fight off four waves of Covenant, and then go back down. And if you haven't finished it yet, you go to the other one, which is on a big hill, and there's a sniper on top, so that's the first time. They'll either be your first time or second time getting a sniper. So you go up there, rescue those Marines, and then after you rescue the Marines, you take off in the Pelican. And that's Halo. The next level is Truth and Reconciliation, which is where you board Covenant ship to go rescue Captain Key since he's been captured. This is done in the middle of night, and you get a sniper with quite a few rounds in it.
Yeah, and that's the Halo 1 sniper had a big reticle, in my opinion. It was a huge reticle for a sniper, which made it so easy, right, to get headshots.
Go
back, play like Anniversary or even the, you know.
I don't know if it made original. It easy to get headshots.
Okay, but it was a pretty big reticle.
It was big, yes. I wouldn't necessarily agree with getting big headshots.
Compared to the later games, it was pretty big reticle, for a sniper in general. You know what I mean? That's everyone listeners, go back and take a look at that.
So you pretty much run around, kill off all the Covenant, and you go around to what, three or four different kind of Covenant camps before you end up getting to the platform that's underneath the grav lift of the Covenant cruiser. So after kind of weaving in and out of all of those, you have to fight off, I think, three or four waves of Covenant, and then you get introduced to Hunters, which are the big blue and green things that are tied together by little worms.
Can of worms.
The big can of worms. And the yes. Nice thing about the Hunters in Halo 1 is that if you shot them in the back, where the worms were exposed with either a pistol or a sniper, it was a one-shot kill. Not like how it is in Halo 3 and Halo Reach, where you actually have to put quite a few rounds into them.
I think in Reach, it's... I mean, it depends on the difficulty, but on Heroic, if you shoot one in the back and then take a shotgun to the exposed worms, it'll kill it. But it's in no way like a one-shot kill. You have to expose their back, and then you have to shoot it with a powerful weapon. Or just keep plowing rounds into it.
So there's still parts of it exposed, but you could actually blow the armor off in Reach, where in Halo 1, you couldn't. It was just
that
what you saw is what you got.
Area, yeah.
Yeah. So that made killing the Hunters... Like, once you figure that out, that made the campaign a lot easier, to be perfectly honest. It's like you pretty much let them charge you, then dodge out of the way, turn around, and shoot them in the back. That was how you took care of Hunters in Halo 1. After that, you get reinforcements, you head up the lift into the ship, and you are faced in a room where you get camo elites, and depending on the difficulty, it's either like 4 waves, 12 waves of Covenant. And it's, I think the first time I did it, I was in there for maybe a good 3 or 4 respawns. How long, do you remember how long it took you to get through those parts?
It took me like 5 or 6 respawns.
Yeah. The Invis Elites, I think, is what throws everyone off on that level.
They don't expect it. I mean,
yeah, it's the first time you see it, and you're sitting around, it's like, what just killed me? What's this blue glowing thing that's over my dead body? And that's actually the first time we saw the energy source, just we couldn't use it.
That would change later game.
Yes, that would. After battling through Halls of Covenant for a while, you come to the cargo bay, or the ship docking bay, where you can see some banshees and some spirits up there. You have to fight all the way up to the top of that. There's ramps that go along the side of the cargo bay. Then you get to the control room of the carrier. You pretty much take out the zealots, the elites there. There's one zealot, there's elites, and then there's grunts. You go through to where the prisoner cells are. You go rescue Keys. Then you escort them back to one of the spirits. You all get in the spirit, and you leave happily. Yay!
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 Escape! Escape!
Then the next level is the infamous Silent Cartographer level, which is the level that we have the beach storming mission, the infamous one there that was shown off. I believe that was the campaign demo for Macworld, and it was the same one they used for Halo CE Anniversary when it came out. That was the level that they showed off with the nice, pretty new graphics.
Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty level. Everybody remembers the Silent Cartographer.
Yeah, it's definitely...
For some reason. I mean, you can take the Warthog and round the entire island and go up and down, and it's like vertical in a way, you know? It's just a fun level.
Oh, lots of fun. On this map, you are pretty much dropped in. You're trying to find the map room, which leads you to Halo's control center. You first have to storm the beach, kill off all the elites there, or the Covenant. Once you do, you get a Warthog drop, and you go around the island. The first structure you find is up in a cliff to your left, and you go adventure into there. Most people go off and kill all the Covenant, then try to go downstairs. And there's a door down there with a Zealot Elite guarding it, and Cortana tells you to not let them lock the door. And most of the times that happens, it's pretty much scripted to where it does, although people have tried to get into it, and I think people have been successful at getting past it. If you don't get past it, though, you have to go and find the security center, and that's off a little more ways up into an entrance that goes into the inside of the island. So you're driving around, and then you see a bunch of trees that are kind of hiding this pathway into the inside. There's a bunch of Covenant around there. You go up the pathway, you clear them out. You encounter 2 hunters on kind of the top center part of the island. You take them out, go through, kill the rest of the hunters. Once you go through that, you will come up to this kind of cliff edge thing where there's another structure that you have to go inside, kill off more hunters. And this level is like pretty jam-packed full of hunters at this point. You go in, you activate or deactivate the security of the facility, then you have to run back out. And if you jump down, if there's some overshields to the right when you exit, you grab an overshield, you can jump down, and you'll still have some shield left. Or if you can jump it correctly, you can still have all of your shield left. Go pick up some rockets, because you'll need it. And there is also another Warthog there. You pick up the Warthog, you drive around the island all the way over to the other side, where you were originally to get into the map room area. Since you've already taken all the Covenant out, you can go in. The door is unlocked. You venture your way down into the pit of Covenant. There's about 3 or 4 different levels that you have to go down before getting to the map room. Once you get down there, you see a hologram of Halo, and then it points you to where the control room is. You have to fight your way all the way back up, and there are 2 hunters in there. If you didn't kill them on your way down there, you have to kill them, or at least try to avoid them on the way back up. And then you get picked up by a pelican. Although when you get to the top, watch out for Invis Elites. Because there's more of them. And this time they don't have swords. They have plasma rifles.
Yeah.
So that's
true. It's a little easier.
A little bit, yeah. You just, if you have any rockets left, you just shoot the heck out of them. Or if you have plasma grenades or grenades, you can usually chunk those. And you can see the shimmers if you're looking really well. And you can see the slight glows of the plasma rifle. So if you look out for those, you can kind of spot them pretty easily. Truth and Reconciliation, when I first played it, though, was really just one of the pretty maps. And it was just a lot of fun because you are coming into the map with... You have the upbeat music, and it's just kind of you're going into live fire, and it's just really cool. It's kind of one of those adrenaline-pumping missions when you first get into it.
Oh, yeah.
That part in Silent Cartographer, when you're down there, was kind of creepy in a way. All those like invisible elites like lurking around the place, you know. Who knows where they are? Get out of here.
Well,
those are always my least favorite parts in Halo 1. Those were a lot of parts and throughout the campaign where you're just like in those, you know, those metal sterile underground or in a mountain, whatever, Forerunner chambers, and it's just you alone and tons of enemies, whether it be Covenant, Flood, whatever. I mean, that's like half the campaign was that, basically.
Right.
So it kind of got repetitive, especially with, I think it's like the sixth mission, the whole like assault on a control room, like where the first time you go to that snowy area.
It's the fifth one.
I mean, it's just like, it's so repetitive going through all those, you know, those like circular, whatever shape, rhombus, I don't know, those rhombus shaped rooms, just nonstop.
Yeah. Assault on the control room. And two betrayals are some of the longest Halo levels that you will play,
and they're so repetitive the whole way through. It's just
like you're navigating your way to the center where the control room is. That's kind of how they designed it.
In a way, it's like kind of how lazy is that? Like they just take one.
No. It fits just fine.
But they use the one map twice.
They use that for almost every level. There's only two levels that they didn't do that. The Maw matches up with the Pillar of Vagum. Keys matches up with Truth and Reconciliation.
Okay, then that is all. That's
the assault on the control room matches up with 343.
Two betrayals. I never even thought of that. Yeah, that's kind of like... Ugh.
But it made sense because you were first...
But it gets repetitive.
You're going into Halo, trying to find the control room, and then once you found out what it was, you're trying to get out. It made sense.
I know, but
the flow that way made perfect sense.
It just
actually wears
on you after a while.
I don't know. I find the campaign really fun to play.
I'm here again. It is fun. I'm not saying it's not fun, but it's just like here again, another one of these rooms again.
Yeah, it was designed to be kind of long and tedious to get to this place that should be well guarded. That makes sense.
Perhaps, yeah.
I mean, you're going through these cliffs that are
designed
underground.
The level design of later Halo games was, it was less repetitive, I guess is the point.
True.
And they don't reuse, well, maybe in Halo 2, especially Halo 3, though, they don't, Halo 3 and Reach, they don't really reuse environments in the campaign too much. Although, then again, like the Storm and Floodgate in Halo 3, it's like, there you go, all right, that's a real callback to that idea of backtracking if there ever was one, you know.
Well, yeah.
You go through the storm. Yeah, you know,
storm
back,
and floodgate.
But this time, right. It's all flood. It's all flood infested. Yeah, there you go. Right.
Right.
So,
the next map is, or the next. Well, the next one is Assault in the Control Room, and this is the long, long one. You're pretty much fighting through corridors of Covenant, and I think there's maybe three or four different sections they have to walk through. Then you go down, you find some Marines, you get in vehicles, you drive some more, you come up against a Wraith for the first time. You keep going, and you just keep on pressing on, and you finally get to the control room. And that's at the top of this big structure. Once you finally get there, you'll definitely know what it is. You come out on a stone bridge that kind of crosses over this structure. Although you have to, what you're supposed to do is go over, drop down, and then walk up the entire thing, zigzag across. If you're clever enough, you can actually get one of the banshees. You can kill one of the elites that are scripted to go into the banshees, and then you can just fly your way up. Or if you do the jump correctly, you can actually jump on the spine of the structure and walk almost all the way up. So there are a few tricks to actually get by the assault on the control room, at least that last part of having to go through the interior part, going down the elevator, then coming out, having to deal with all the Covenant on the ground, and just kind of shortens the map. There's a few shortcuts in Assault on the Control Room you can take, and I think that's one of the bigger ones. But once you get up there, you open some big doors, you finally get to the control room, you plug in Cortana, and she finally kind of gets an understanding of what Halo is. She kind of freaks out with how much information she's processing, and she basically tells Chief to go find Keys before he does something stupid, for the most part. She's processing so much information that she's really not establishing coherent sentences at the time. So you leave her off on her own, and you go off and run to find Keys. And this is the first part where we see the creepy swamp area. This was for Halo CEA. This was kind of one of the things where they showed off the big differences between the Halo 1 graphics and the CEA graphics. And there's definitely a big change there. For the most part, 343 Guilty Spark, which is the name of this level, is kind of one of those eerie levels. It's also the first time where we meet the Flood. So this is pretty much a defining moment for a lot of Halo players, is this level.
Yeah, the idea that, hey, this enemy I thought I was fighting really isn't the main enemy. Like,
well, they are a core enemy in the game. It's just there's
I mean, the Flood is the bigger threat as far as just a threat to existence.
Yeah. Kind of reminds me actually of, like, in World of Warcraft, or how, like, every expansion, there's, like, because it's all about the war between the Horde and the Alliance, like, the two factions, but then they always, like, band together to fight the bigger threat. It's, like, kind of the same thing, but they don't really band together. Well, they kind of do an Halo 3. The elites and the UNS. Yeah. But they're still... You know
certain,
what I mean.
Certain parts of the Covenant, mostly the elites, do kind of pair up. And we see that in Halo 2, but we'll get to that when we talk about that game.
But it's like we have to unite to fight this bigger enemy.
The bigger threat, the more impending threat at the time. So 343 Guilty Spark, you start off where the Pelican drops down. You go and you find the captain's dropship. It's been abandoned with a repeating radio transmission, a Mayday. And then you find a shotgun, which is highly advisable that you pick up for a certain way into the game or the level. You fight your way through some Covenant that are running around, and you get to a structure that's kind of embedded into a side of a wall, and then there's a big elevator. You descend into the pit, and there's some more Covenant that you go fight off, and you're basically running around trying to find out where the captain has gone. After kind of walking your way through some corridors, it's a pretty defined path. There's the green doors pretty much signify where you need to go. Once you get to the place you need to be, there's a cutscene that initiates and the creepy music that starts to play. Now you kind of see Chief on edge during the cutscene. There's a security override panel that's on a door. So you open that, you see one of the Marines fall into your arms, and you think you hear something, Chief thinks he hears something, he turns around, nothing's there. You go in, you find the helmet of Private Jenkins, and then you watch the film. So you see them going into the structure just like you did, fighting off some Covenant, and then there's some footage of them kind of seeing what got left behind by some flood, where the Covenant have already released the flood at this point. You're basically going in, you're finding out that, oh, there's something else here that we should be more worried about. After you get done watching it, you start to hear noises, you get out of the cutscene, and then you see the little infection forms pop out of the doors. And this is our introduction of the flood. And I want to pause right here and kind of ask you two, what's going through your minds at this point? Because I know for me, it's like, oh, wow, this doesn't seem very good.
It's like, wow, this just went from like military shooter to kind of parasitic horror in a real flash.
And the fact that all those little things could really break away the doors. And yeah, and I mean, Halo is designed to be kind of a containment facility for that. Containment and experimentation. So the fact that they were able to break out like that was kind of scary.
That they're that powerful, you know, they're not just little weaklings.
No, definitely not.
Oh, yeah.
But after you fight off the weaklings, which, if you guys haven't played, once you get there, you pick out your assault rifle and you just spray and pray. That's what you do. Because they actually will set off chain reactions on each other. You pop one, and there's some around them, it'll just be a chain reaction. And that's usually the easiest way to take them out. About five waves of that, though, is when you get introduced to the combat forms. And those are the ones that can do the real damage to you.
Yeah.
So they'll come flying through the door that you came into originally with arms flailing, and they have a pretty powerful melee. So they'll just come run up and hit you until you die. At that point, like, the little popcorn things were nothing compared to these. Once these came out, that's when you started to really crap your pants. Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, this whole level is crap your pants, the level.
Yeah, and this is just the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
Because once you get back out, you have to try to get out, and you have to fight through more Flood and Covenant. Like, there's mix of Flood and Covenant fighting each other throughout the rest of the level. And you try to go back up the way you originally came in, but when you try to get the elevator to come down, it decides to kind of blow up.
Yeah.
So you can't go out that way, so you have to go through into the structure deeper and find another route back up. You actually have to go down into the structure more, wind your way around through some more identical corridors, and then find another elevator to take you all the way back up. And then that's where you meet up with some friendly Marines, which is nice to see for a change.
I know, that was like so refreshing, you know, to see them. Like, oh, thank God you guys are here. You know, it was like really needed backup.
Well, you're a Spartan. Hopefully you don't need that much backup.
Well, yeah, it was just nice. It was like mental comfort.
Right.
Or like at least a meat shield at the very least, right?
Fair enough.
Go run at these Flood.
Right.
Yeah.
So once you get up there, you meet up with them. The captain is not there, unfortunately. You're still not sure where exactly he is. But you meet up with the Marines, and they've pretty much said they've radioed in for extraction. Echo 419 radios in, says she's on station. You go out to another structure that's a little bit deeper into the swamp, fighting off Flood along the way. And once you get there, you get introduced to some Sentinels and Guilty Spark. This is our first introduction to 343 Guilty Spark, which is why that is the name of the level. And once you fight off all the local Flood, Guilty Spark kind of teleports you up to a little ledge and introduces himself to you as being the monitor of Installation 04. And his job was basically to monitor the installation during its kind of dormant state. He says that someone has released the Flood and that something needs to be done about it. So he teleports you off to some unknown place, and you leave the rest of the Marines and Echo 419 wondering where the heck you went.
Yo, where'd he go?
Where'd you go? Where'd you go, Chief? I lost your signal. So at this point, you're really like, what the hell just happened? Because you just got introduced to the Flood. You got introduced to this AI out of nowhere that you have no idea who or what he is. And he's saying, I need your help. And he just teleports you somewhere without your consent.
and he would turn out to be the biggest kind of, I don't know, he's a betrayer in a way in the Halo franchise.
Yes.
You think you trust 343, and then all of a sudden in Halo 3, things change.
Yeah. Well, there's also another map coming up in Halo 1 where it talks about biggest betraying of things.
Oh, yeah.
So, but that's after the next level, which is the library, which is infamously known as repetitive and probably one of the hardest levels on Halo or in Halo CE.
It's tough.
Frustrating is a word that pretty much wraps this up. Very, very frustrating, and especially on Legendary. Oh my goodness gracious. When you're doing Legendary, it's best to look up a speedrun guide because it gives you lots of nice tricks.
Oh yeah.
And I definitely utilized them when I got CEA. Definitely put those to work. So the library, you have Guilty Spark kind of talking to you here and there about what the facility is, what the purpose of it is, and kind of your whole role in what he's trying to make you do. So you fight through four different levels of Flood to get up to the Index of Halo, which for some reason he couldn't just teleport you up there. If you read the books, you kind of understand that it's kind of a test to make sure that you are quote-unquote worthy of handling the Index.
Of reclaiming.
Yeah, exactly, reclaiming the Index. So you go through four levels of hell, pretty much. And there are certain sections within the level where it's a dead stop. And if you know certain places, you can hide from having to fight Covenant for 3 straight minutes. Because there are those kinds of situations. And it's like the doors Guilty Spark says are jammed or stuck. So he has to go to some other part of the installation, get it unstuck, and then let you through. And the sentinels...
Wait here for a second.
Yes, wait here for a second. And sometimes you get sentinels, and sometimes you don't. And the sentinels aren't always that effective, unfortunately.
No.
But after the four layers of hell, you finally get out to the Index. It's on this platform. You take the elevator down to get retrieve the Index. Once you're basically just following orders at this point. You're blindly following Guilty Spark. It's like, okay, I'll just do what you're asking me to do. When you get to the Index, you retrieve the Index, and the monitor immediately zaps it out of your hands. It's like, so what was that for? At least that was the thought that was going through my mind. It's like, why couldn't you have done that on your own?
Yeah, he was kind of being a dick at that point.
Yeah. Protocol dictates that I take possession of the Index for transport. Your vulnerable form may become infected or something like that.
Yeah, that's kind of when I got the feeling like, you know, wait, am
it's
I
like involved? I'm a giant puppet in this thing right now.
Yeah, am I involved in something bigger than I can see right now? Like, is this really going good places? I'm not sure.
Right. It's at that point where you're like, okay, what's really going on here? What's your agenda?
Yeah.
Guilty Spark.
Yeah.
You're welcome, 343.
And then...
Yeah, are they trying to, like, say something to us, right? Where by picking that number, is there a company?
Well, yeah, that's why they did it.
What, like...
Because of Guilty Spark.
Like, where is this going? What is your agenda? Like,
no,
should we really trust you?
No.
They're going to take all that money and build a Halo, destroy everyone in the galaxy. We're all going to die.
They probably could build a Halo. You know, when Halo 4 comes out... And then Halo 5 and 6 too, I mean, they're going to have a lot of money, you know, think about that.
I don't think it's an issue of money as it is of resources. Well, I don't think money's an issue at that point.
You can make a smaller version of Halo, like an Earth-sized version, a Moon-sized version, like a scale it down a little bit.
I still think it's an issue of resources and energy. I don't think our technology is even advanced. If it was, yeah, that'd be pretty bad. Just kiss nuclear warfare out the door. The next level is Two Betrayals. This is where we take the Index to the control room. You try to put it in the system. You're just following orders from Guilty Spark at that point. And it doesn't go exactly according to plan of what Guilty Spark was thinking. She's like, odd, that wasn't supposed to happen. And then out of nowhere, Cortana pops up. At that point, it's like, remember you put me in here? Yeah. So,
Did we mention Cortana's, like, appearance in Halo 1? I thought she kind of looked like a boy, almost, with that haircut.
Tomboyish, yeah. Very much so.
And then you compare that to all the way Halo 3. I mean, Halo 3, they really kind of like sexy-ify her. You know what I mean?
Well, they do that for Halo 2.
A little bit, but not quite as much as in Halo 3. Go back and look at some of those scenes in Halo 3. It's almost kind of like blatant what they're doing. You know what I mean? Like,
right. Oh, no, my personal favorite Cortana is the Halo 3 Cortana. So
yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Well,
Halo 4, she has like a weird like bowl haircut. I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't quite get it.
Yeah.
Oh well. So two betrayals. Cortana stops the activation of the rings and intercepts the index from activating the Halo. And she goes on this tirade of what Halo actually is and what she just prevented you from doing. And Chief is a little doubtful for this, so he turns around to Guilty Spark is like, is this true? And he's like, more or less. So it's like, yeah. Oh, you just were ready to slit our throats. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks for letting me know what I was about to do. Because he was you're under the guise as Chief that you are activating Halo's defenses to wipe out the Flood, which, in a sense, is not completely inaccurate, because it's wiping out the Flood in a different term. But what Halo was designed to do was wipe out all sentient life, and it's one big giant weapon, so the Flood couldn't populate. So, with that said, you're kind of like, well, that sucks, and that's where the level name 2 Betrayal comes into effect. So, you take Cortana, you dash out of the control room as quickly as possible, and there are three phase pulse generators that you have to go and take out to prevent the monitor from trying to activate Halo by other means. So, you are going through pretty much the same path that you did in Assault on the Control Room, except backwards, to take out all of those pulse generators. Once you get towards the end, you take off on a different path, and after that, you are... Cortana says she has found keys, and that he's been on the cruiser. She found the IIF tags back on the Truth and Reconciliation. No life signs, but he just has the transponder signal. So after you take out all of the pulse generators, she figures out how to use the teleporting system, and she teleports you onto the Truth and Reconciliation upside down. I thought that was kind of funny.
Oops.
Yeah, it's like, oops. Oh, I see. The coordinates are crank. So level 9, which is what we're on, is keys. And this is where you're trying to save keys. And you're actually teleported right outside the room where he is. The only thing is, from how the ship has been kind of damaged so far, there's really no way to get to him directly. So you have to walk around a little bit. There's this big hole in the ship that's leaking coolant. So you have to jump down there, fight your way through a canyon of Flood and Covenant. And after a while, you'll find a lift that goes back up into the Truth and Reconciliation. You have to walk around similarly like you did on the Truth and Reconciliation level. You're almost doing an exact same pathway to get to keys in the control room for the Truth and Reconciliation, which is where you find out that Keys has essentially been absorbed into this giant Flood form. He's still kind of conscious at that point because he's telling Chief and Cortana to leave him alone and just forget about him. But for the most part, he's Flood. If you've watched the terminals in the CEA, and have read the books, the Flood is basically just stripping away his memories one by one,
turning him into a zombie, basically.
Well, not even as
well.
Not even really
zombie.
A zombie anymore.
Just nothing. He has no memory.
I mean,
he's
being completely
humanity.
Absorbed. There's going to be pretty much no trace of him left.
Yeah.
So You get the implant that's in him. You get the override code for the Pillar of Autumn to initiate a self-destruct, which is what you what Cortana has decided is the best course of action. You have to fight your way out through some spec ops grunts and elites with more waves of Flood. And once you get out to the hangar bay, you can grab on the Banshee and you fly out. And that's the end of Keys. And then you get to the last level of Halo, which is the Maw. And this is where you have to navigate through the ships. You get dropped off on the first set of escape pods that you go past in the game. You have to navigate through the corridors, get to the bridge, and activate the countdown. Once you activate the countdown, you hear someone over the PA system. Guess who? Guilty Spark. Guilty Spark's obviously thinking one step ahead of you, so he's already rummaging through all the databases that are on the Pillar of Autumn, gathering as much information as he can, and he's able to stop the countdown. Which sucks, because that was pretty much your ticket to ensure that Halo would not get fired.
Yeah.
Chief comes up with this brilliant idea to just use explosives on the fusion reactors. So you walk out of the bridge, you fight some more Flood, and once you get to the engineering area, it's a good idea to not go in there quite yet, and there's actually another room that is filled with rocket launchers and a few other weapons. I think there's a shotgun, assault rifle ammo in there that you can go pick up as well. But a rocket launcher is one of the things you will want to have, because you'll need it for blowing up the fusion reactors.
How else are you going to pod blast the core?
Grenades. You can use grenades.
Frog blast the... I'm trying to remember what the exact... Frog blast the vent core. Did it.
What's that from?
I don't know.
All right.
I wish I knew, but there's something about frog blasting the vent core, which is a like classic Halo reference, and I was never exactly sure what it meant.
Maybe you can look it up. Yeah. Because I'm not sure.
I use grenades, but I need to figure out what it is.
I'm not sure. So once you get the rockets and grenades, you go through engineering, you have to walk up a couple of ramps, and there's one ramp that actually goes all the way up to where you need to get. Once you get into engineering, you want to go all the way to the right, and that's where the main ramp is that you want to go up. Go all the way to the top, and the best way to actually take out the fusion reactors is to open the chamber, hop on the pipe that pulls back, and then when the vents are open, shoot a rocket in it. Once that happens, you just stay on the pipe until it closes all the way, because it closes to try to prevent the overload. You jump back onto the platform and you run around to the other three and you do that. The only thing is you have to watch out for the Flood and the Sentinels that come, because now the Sentinels are shooting at you. The Sentinels were shooting at you ever since Guilty Spark stopped the countdown. And once you go and destroy the fusion reactors, or at least damage them enough to where they're going to go into overload, you have to make your way up to an elevator that goes to a service shaft where you can get out to an area where Echo 319 can come pick you up.
You mean Echo 419?
419, sorry. Echo 419 can pick.
Hammer. Mm.
So you go up this elevator and get in the Warthog, and it's the infamous timed Warthog run. You get, what is it, 6 minutes? I think in all the difficulties except for Legendary, you get 5 minutes before the core goes critical. You have to navigate your way through this service corridor where there's a bunch of platforms and pillars everywhere, and it's kind of a tedious task in the Warthog. And then there's some areas that just have tunnels where you go under and over things, and you're just trying to avoid as much Flood and Covenant as possible.
Especially when you get those, what are they called, the carrier form Flood?
Oh, those are a pain.
They explode and like
those
flip you over when you run into them. Oh, especially for that anniversary achievement, with like no flipping over.
Yeah, not being ejected from the hog, yes.
Yeah, and they always just flip you over. You got to stay away from those. You know?
Well, there's usually only one or two parts during that run where that actually can happen.
Well, if you drive it right. You just got to make sure not to drive into them, yeah.
Right, but they are avoidable.
Yeah.
So you drive around, you get to the point where Echo 419 is supposed to come pick you up. She's being fired at, so she eventually goes down and gets taken out. So at that point where you're like, well, that sucks. Cortana checks the inventory and there's a longsword still available, so you have to go another like 1.4, 1.2 kilometers down the service shaft more, and then you have to fight through more Flood, more Covenant, or just drive through them, I guess. And then you get to the very end where you hop out, and the best way to do it is kind of go out around the dividers. So once you get out of the Warthog, just go over to the side and then just walk past, because then you don't have to shoot any of the Covenant or Flood down. Then you get back in, head up the ramp, and get into the longsword, which gets you out and free just in time before the Pillar of Autumn goes critical and blows up. So there's also the Grunty Thirst Easter egg.
And a big Grunty Thirst!
Yes.
So go buy some Mountain Dew and get your double XP.
Ha 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 ha.
I bought some of that today. I got some Code Red. It's quite delicious.
Very nice.
Yeah. And some Cool Ranch Doritos.
Is the codes with the Cool Ranch? I thought it was just for like the regular ones.
No, I think Doritos and Mountain Dew of all kinds. Yeah,
well, the Mountain Dew, I think, is just Gamer Fuel.
No, I know. I got a Code Red that had Halo 4, and then they had the green one with Halo 4. Oh, yeah, all the flavors have Halo 4.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Fair enough. Go out and buy some Mountain Dew and Doritos.
Fair enough. I did not know that.
It's how we pay our bills. Sponsorships.
No, we don't have any sponsorships. So that wraps up all the levels of Halo for the most part. Is there anything that I missed that you guys think we should cover? I think this is pretty much it, baby. Holy. Oh, yeah, the legendary Easter egg.
That is totally, absolutely canon.
No, it's not.
It's 100% canon. I still believe it's canon, even though they say it's not.
It's not canon.
It's canon. He teleported off at the last second.
No. Because if you read the books, he was nowhere near there.
Yeah, no.
No, he teleported off of there.
But it's canon to me.
Into the Pelican.
No.
He stole a teleporter from Guilty Spark.
It's not canon.
Oh, all right.
Their love for each other teleported them off the Halo.
Ha 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 ha.
Yeah.
Funny. All right. Well, that's going to wrap up this show. We spent quite a bit taking time to talk about Halo 1, so we're just going to hopefully do another show to talk about Halo 2 and then another one to talk about Halo 3 if we have time before the game comes out, which is going to be interesting because I am pretty much gone from the 1st of November on and won't really be able to do any podcasts of any kind. So it's going to be interesting trying to get the rest of these out. We may have to kind of abbreviate our discussions and maybe throw Halo 2 and 3 into one show, but we'll see. Hopefully this is enough of an overview for you guys to kind of get a grasp of what Halo 1 was about. If you have any questions, feel free to send us emails about them and we'll try to answer them in one of the upcoming shows talking about Halo 2 and Halo 3. So thank you guys for listening. For the most part, you can follow us on our website, podtacular.com. You can check us out on Twitter, Facebook, iTunes, Zoom, subscribe via RSS. We have one more Monday Night Matchmaking that we will be doing before Halo 4 comes out, and that is this next Monday, which is the 29th of October. So make sure you guys come and check that out. It's also someone's birthday as well.
Wait, who?
Yours?
Oh, okay, that's cool. Wait, today?
No, 29th.
Yeah, everyone send me presents.
So, yes, that will be having a birthday on our last Monday Night Matchmaking before Halo 4.
Ooh.
So,
I used everyone. I hit Inheritor on Halo Reach.
Oh, yes, he did.
Yeah.
That's quite an accomplishment, because I don't really plan on getting that.
After 2 years of this game.
That's a long time.
That is a long time.
All right, well, that's going to wrap up the show. Thanks again, guys, for listening, and we will talk to you guys on our next show. Peace.
Peace out.
Bye.
Home slice.
Keep on fragging keys.